This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast.
And this week, Sarah and I are both sick.
Yup.
So if our voices sound a little less annoying than usual,
that's why.
That's why. But I probably just sound even more nasally than I usually do because I am now just a snot human.
I just woke up this morning feeling sick, yeah. So I'm going to be that way like tomorrow.
I've been sick for a couple of days now. It's been a weekend of my body rejecting me as a person.
I feel
rejecting
that.
Me as its host, basically.
Yeah. I mean, this is like my third time I've been sick in 2 months, so I'm basically just dying at this point.
This is my first time being sick in like several years. So
weren't you sick?
Like
on the podcast before?
I was like, I get a sore throat randomly, mm-hmm. and like a little bit of a runny nose, but I think it's just because I have a really plugged up nose all the time.
Maybe.
Like via allergies.
Do you have a deviated septum?
Oh, for sure. Okay. Have you ever looked at my nose?
No. I haven't.
Like.
Okay.
It's hella deviated. It's supposed to just go straight up.
Yeah.
But yeah. Super deviated.
I just looked inside of Morgan's
nose. Yeah, I did a nice pig nose for her so she could get all the goods. But this week,
we are covering the abductions of Sean Hornbeck and Ben Ownby.
Yeah.
And they were taken by the same man, and Sean Hornbeck was taken for almost 4.5 years.
Right.
And Ben Ownby was taken for about 6 days before they were rescued.
Able to locate him.
Yeah, they were rescued by a great tipster.
Nice. Yeah, this is a crazy story. And I don't know that I've really heard it on a podcast before. I kind of just found it when I was like looking at cases that didn't end in murder.
Yeah. But what are you binging,
oh,
my friend?
Shit, I totally forgot. So I have been binging this thing for like ever. Probably like at this point a year or two.
Okay.
And it's super lame. It's the phone app Hogwarts Mystery.
Oh, yes, you have.
The thing is, it's such a boring game. Like, all you do is click through and you have to wait for your energy to come back. But like, now I'm so invested in the storyline that I need to know how it ends. And now you get to play on the Quidditch team.
Shit.
It's very cool.
See, she got me into it and I played for like probably 2 months, and
yeah.
then just like I had a period where I stopped playing all games,
yeah,
and never went back to it. But it is fun.
It's okay.
I wouldn't call it fun.
Azula disagrees.
Yeah,
she thinks it's great fun. But what are you binging this week? That was like the first time I think you've asked me first, and it really threw me off guard.
Right?
Yeah, it was very concerning.
So. As we all know, I love watching, like, Colleen Ballinger.
Yeah.
And so she does Miranda Sings,
mm-hmm.
which I find Miranda Sings videos not as entertaining and kind of annoying.
I feel like we were too old when the Miranda Sings thing happened to, like, get it.
Yeah.
Because I don't get it really either.
But I know that, like, her and Patrick, or her and Eric,
yeah.
met on the set of Haters Back Off, which is her show. He plays the character,
like the
Patrick.
Love interest, right?
Yeah. And
Azula, what is going on?
I don't know. She's writing so much stuff on my laptop. And so I decided to start binging Haters Back Off, and I've watched like I think 6 or 7 episodes so far.
Yeah.
And it's not bad. Like, it's real cringeworthy.
Right.
But it's also pretty funny. And
yeah.
Angela Kinsey plays her mom. And, like, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I like it.
I think that, like, Miranda Sings in general is just supposed to be cringy.
Mm-hmm.
But I just find it hard to watch. Like, I never watch her videos on YouTube either. But, yeah, that's cool. I tried watching it like a long time ago, so maybe I'll give it another shot. I just realized I'm not wearing my glasses, which is why I can't read what's on the screen in front of me, so I'm going to go get them.
All right.
20 minutes later.
All right. Should we get this story started, my friend?
I suppose so.
Okay. So we are going to start off with Sean Damien Hornbeck, and this is the tale of his kidnapping. That was a weird way to put it. I'm sorry. I'm in a mood, apparently. Sean was an 11-year-old boy at the time that he was kidnapped. He was described as a fun and curious boy, and he loved playing video games, watching cartoons, and riding his bike. He was like an average kid. He lived with his mom, Pam Akers, and his stepdad, Craig Akers, who had basically stepped up and been his father figure since Sean was a baby.
Like, Craig Akers is the ultimate dad figure. He's really great.
That's awesome. He also had two older sisters, Jackie and Jennifer, and his parents were actually going through the legal process for his stepdad to adopt him at the time of his abduction. So he was like, if you're going to step up and do that, that probably means you're a pretty good guy. Sean also looked up to Craig and wanted to be a computer programmer when he grew up, just like Craig was. Sean had even been the one to walk his mother down the aisle when he was six and gave her away on the day her and Craig got married, which is like the cutest thing I've ever heard. On Sunday, October 6th, 2002, after eating breakfast and playing video games, he had asked his mom and stepdad if he could ride his new bike that his stepdad had just bought him for his birthday to a friend's house, and his parents agreed. He left around 1 p.m., and his parents told him to be home by 5 for dinner. And this was, like, pretty common, because it was an era when you could ride your bike to your friend's house without your parents being like, I'm going to drive behind you in my car the entire time. He left his parents' house before wearing his bright orange Little League jersey. But he didn't go to his friend's house. He was seen around town throughout the day, playing basketball at a local club and at the grocery store buying candy. At around 4:30 p.m., he had been seen riding his bike home from a friend's house near Richwoods, Missouri, on Highway A. This was the last time he would ever be seen.
So, this was a common path that Sean took all the time to his friend's house and in and out of town. He always was on Highway A. And Sean was about a half mile away from his house when he noticed a truck was driving slow behind him and wouldn't pass him. Sean started to get worried, thinking that the truck was following him. And the truck eventually stopped for a minute, which calmed Sean's nerves for a little bit. But then the truck started moving again, this time picking up speed. When Sean looked behind him, he saw that the truck was driving straight towards him. A man named Michael J. Devlin, who was driving the truck, hit the back of Sean's bike in order to knock him off. So when Sean fell off his bike, he landed in a ditch and his bike broke. And at this time, Michael Devlin was 41 years old.
Yeah.
At first, Devlin got out of the truck and acted like he was very concerned for Sean. He helped Sean up out of the ditch and asked if he was okay. Sean was really confused, wondering if the man had accidentally hit him or if it was on purpose. He had also never seen this man before, as he knew everyone that lived in this small town. Just moments later, Devlin picked the 90 boy. No, the 90 boy.
90 boy. He was a 90 boy?
He was. Just moments later, Devlin picked up the 90-pound boy, throwing him over his shoulder, and threw him in the bed of the truck. He landed hard, belly down.
Like, knock the wind out of you.
Mm-hmm. Sean then felt Devlin's boot push into his back and his arms were yanked behind him and kept together with duct tape. Devlin also used the duct tape to bind Sean's feet and cover his mouth as he was kicking and screaming, trying to escape. He continued trying to scream and flail around, hoping that a passing car would hear him, as this was usually a pretty populated area. But after Sean was properly tied up, Devlin threw him into the passenger side of the truck and grabbed a 9mm handgun to scare Sean. After putting him inside the truck, Devlin said to Sean, quote, "You were just at the wrong place at the wrong time."
Like, what a sinister, creepy fucking thing to say to someone.
But what a fucking douche.
Oh, yeah, such a douche. But he's like, I know what's going to creep this kid out.
Mm-hmm. Devlin also put Sean's mangled bike into the back of his truck, so there wouldn't even be a trace of evidence left before he started driving off.
Yeah, because if the police had found a mangled bike, like, they would know something happened. Mm-hmm. And they, it's okay, it's fine. So shortly after 5 p.m., his mother, Pam, became worried that he wasn't home and sat there not eating her dinner while her family ate around her, because her son was usually, like, very prompt in getting home, right?
Well, so he'd been home late a couple times.
Oh, I should just read the next sentence. Yeah. See, I didn't think to read this ahead of time, so this is all just
new to you.
New to me.
Yeah.
Which is why it's hard reading the sentences when I have nothing. I should have read it. I'm a dumbass.
That's okay.
But her husband reassured her, saying that Sean had been late coming home before, and he probably had just lost track of time, and he would be home any minute. By 6 o'clock, the sun had set, and the entire family began to worry, as Sean was afraid of the dark. As the hours grew on, they began calling around to his friends' houses, all who said that they had not seen Sean. By 8 o'clock, Pam and Craig called the police and filed a missing persons report for Sean. But notice they filed that missing persons report fucking immediately.
Right.
Like, I feel like there's this weird thing where you think you have to wait 24 hours, mm-hmm. 48 hours. Just call. And if they tell you you can't, then you can't, but you still called, you know?
Yeah. You still were proactive about
it. Yeah. By early morning, police, the family, and more than 100 volunteers started the search for Sean. They were on foot, ATVs, and on horseback. They searched the woods and town all day with no luck. The volunteers had to stop the search when night fell, as the woods filling much of the town, and they were also filled with abandoned mine shafts, which would be very dangerous to comb through at night. But the police continued searching throughout that next night. Rescue dogs did pick up Sean's scent for a short time, but the scent suddenly disappeared with absolutely no trace of Sean being found, which that happens a lot when, like, someone's driven away.
Yeah.
Because that is probably what happened with that one kid. I can't remember his name right now. The one who, like, it was super weird and his parents.
Oh, Bryce.
Bryce Las Pisa.
Las Pisa, yeah. Yeah.
Pam didn't sleep that night, wanting to stay by the phone in case police called, and she printed hundreds of missing persons flyers out to hand around about town. Friends, family, and even strangers came from all over the country to help with the search for Sean. Pam and Craig felt guilty for letting Sean go out on his own that day, and Pam would sometimes blame herself, saying, "I do feel that I failed on the part of protecting him and keeping him safe and keeping him at home." Craig said that he felt the same way, saying, "I just go over in my mind all the different things we could have done that day." Every inch of Richwood was searched. One of the investigators was quoted, "I searched strip mines, I searched caves, riverways, abandoned farms, abandoned trailers, cemeteries, lakes. I've drained lakes." On Wednesday, an anonymous tip came into the phone lines saying that four people, high on meth, had been driving a red car and hit a boy and threw the injured boy into the car. They apparently had taken the boy to a secluded spot, shot him, and dumped his body in a well. The tip had led police straight to a red car, which had blood and hair on the dented bumper. After investigating, the owner of the car had claimed to have hit a dog and had no knowledge of Sean. Once the DNA came back, it was determined that the blood and hair had in fact been from a dog, and the tip had most likely been a prank. Everyone in the county was interviewed, including neighbors, friends, and teachers and students at all of the surrounding schools. They also checked out all the nearby sex offenders and child molesters with no results. By Wednesday night, with still no leads and signs of Sean having covered a 20-mile radius of Richwood, police called off the volunteer search. The FBI and Missouri State Police took over the investigation, changing it from a search and rescue mission to a criminal abduction case.
So, the day that the police called off the search, his parents created the site seanhornbeck.com. The site featured pictures of Sean, printable posters, descriptions of the search, and updates on what was happening since Sean had gone missing. On Thursday, Pam and Craig set up their own volunteer search party at a local church and invited anyone who could help. But volunteers were low, going from 200 in the beginning to about 30. Apart from the website, the family had multiple television and radio appearances trying to spread the word as far as possible. But nationwide broadcasting didn't really cover Sean's case in the beginning, as there were other many large events happening at this time, including the start of the War on Terror, the abduction of Elizabeth Smart, and the DC Sniper. The Acres did get to appear on the Today Show, though, which was the most watched morning show in the nation.
Yeah.
And after the appearance on the Today Show, at the end of the week, more volunteers came out for a few more days to help with the search. But again, nice. Numbers dwindled afterwards.
Yeah. It is also hard, though, like, because you also have to work and things like that.
Exactly.
So that would be pretty difficult to maintain that high of a volunteer base, unfortunately. Mm-hmm.
So the Acres also went on the Montel Williams show, where psychic Sylvia Brown told them that Sean was dead.
This bitch.
So I watched it. I watched
her
on it, and it was terrible. So, like, she went on to tell them several things about the abductor and abduction that was wrong. She said that the man who picked him up was named Michael, which is true, but Michael is the most common name in the world.
Yeah.
But she said that he was Hispanic, with long, dark dreadlocks, and drove an old model blue Chevy sedan. And, like, you watched Pam just start crying when she was like, yeah, he's dead.
Yeah.
And she was like, there's a friend named Keith who knows everything that's happening. And they were like, we don't know a Keith. And yeah. She's like, just look for a Keith and this guy. And he drove the same car that I had when I was young. And, like, she's just fucking nuts.
And, like, the thing is, why, if you know you're running a scam, would you give such specific information?
And so, yeah, because, like, this is literally the second case we've covered where the same woman has given wrong information to a family.
Yeah, and was she ever really right other than, like, being vague and being like, you have someone in your life who has passed away? Like, yeah, everyone in their life at some point has someone fucking pass away.
I think she's had some things, but I watched this, like, there's a website called StopSylviaBrown.com.
Nice.
And they, like, interviewed, or they had clips of, like, Montel Williams where he literally said, like, yeah, she's a fucking character and it's funny to watch her, and, like, I don't believe in psychics, but she gives us ratings.
Yeah,
like,
it's just, you're, like, messing with people's lives, especially if it's people who are coming to you on advice about abducted children. Mm-hmm. Like, if someone wants to talk to their dead whatever, like, it's still fucked up, but I care less about it because you're leading these families on to, like, either get hope or just completely be shattered.
Yeah, because she was just like, oh yeah, he's dead.
Yeah.
And she was like, he's buried in the woods, but in the woods there's just these two random boulders just out of nowhere, and he's right there in between them. And, like, everyone is just like, what the fuck.
Yeah, it's too much for me.
It is.
Not a fan.
But besides that, Sean's picture was also posted on America's Most Wanted website, and there was a reward posted for $20,000 on information leading to the discovery of Sean or information for it. By the end of the second week, even the law enforcement disbanded their task force, still investigating, but no longer putting out search parties, mainly just working on leads from tipsters.
Yeah.
But the Acres went on searching for years, determined to find answers. They funneled all of their life savings into the Sean Hornbeck Foundation, a nonprofit created to provide funds for any way to search for or find Sean. Craig Acres told a reporter, quote, we cashed in my 401k. Every penny that we have ever saved went into the search for Sean. Craig also told a report for 48 hours, quote, nighttime was about the only time where we really did have the opportunity to talk honestly about things and share our emotions, and that was probably the roughest times. You're sitting there alone, and you're just trying to figure out what happened to your son.
Yeah. This is a very random question.
Yeah.
Did we ever find out why Sean's last name is Hornbeck? Is that, like, his that's real his, father's
yeah.
name?
Yeah, that's his real father's last name.
Okay.
And they were going to change it to Akers once
when the adoption went through. That yeah. makes sense. Okay. Drinks alcohol to soar my mm-hmm. tickle in my throat.
It kills all the bacteria.
You're right. So Sean was taken about an hour away to Devlin's ground floor apartment in Kirkwood, which was a subdivision of St. Louis. On the drive to the apartment, which to Sean felt like hours, the gun was pointed at him the entire time, and he didn't dare to try to move or even look out the window. He tried calming himself down by thinking about his family and hoping that they were looking for him, which they were, luckily, mm-hmm. but he was too far away. When they got to the destination, Devlin cut the duct tape, binding Sean's feet, pointing the gun at him, and hurried him into the apartment. The apartment was run down, musty smelling, and absolutely filthy. There was trash everywhere, little furniture, but a big TV with lots of video games. Classic bachelor.
Right.
Sean was tied to an old, disgusting smelling futon, and his mouth was kept duct taped shut. The first night he was at the apartment, he was raped repeatedly, and Devlin took photos while assaulting him. When Devlin went to bed that first night, he put the gun to Sean's head and told him that if he ever tried to run or tell anyone what happened, he would kill Sean and his whole family. Sean would be forced to promise he wouldn't run or tell every night for the first month that he was kept there, which would be very emotionally and like mentally exhausting. Mm-hmm. Sean would refer to the man as the monster silently to himself. He was kept tied up for about a month, either to the futon when Devlin was away, or to Devlin himself, or to his bed. Devlin would come home around lunchtime to feed Sean and let him use the restroom.
It's like a dog.
Yeah, like he's letting him out.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. At night, Devlin would bring Sean to bed with him to sleep and would tie a rope around his waist and the other end around Sean's in case Sean tried to leave. He would also wake Sean up every 45 minutes at night, which is a tactic to wear down a person. And like Jim Jones, the cultist, did this to mm-hmm. his people. So since Sean was dependent of Devlin in order to eat, sleep, or go to the bathroom, he started to become grateful for the gift of life and was a prime example of Stockholm Syndrome. Once Devlin realized that he was in complete control of Sean, he stopped having Sean tied up all of the time. He got tired of having to leave work every day to go home and take care of Sean, so he decided to try leaving him untied when he went out.
So I read an article when doing research,
yeah,
and I think it was like Newsweek or something like that, and it was so biased.
Yeah.
Like, it had happened right after, like, he was found, and they were talking about basically why he didn't run, even though he stopped tying him up.
Oh, yeah. I think I read that one, too, and they were basically like, just shitting on Sean for not leaving, right?
Yeah, like, the first sentence was, like, Sean Hornbeck, who was allegedly kidnapped.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, fuck you.
Yeah.
And then another one was, like, said the so-called Stockholm Syndrome, and I was like, it's a real fucking thing. Yeah. I don't know why it's so called. Like, yeah, it pissed me off.
I know. I was reading that article, and I was like, oh, okay, so I just can't get any information from this article, yeah, because you're just blaming a literal child mm-hmm. for his own abduction.
Yeah.
You're a good person, for sure.
So the first day that Devlin left Sean untied while he went to work, he came home and was surprised that Sean was still there, hunched over on the couch, playing video games. He was shocked that Sean hadn't tried to escape and had basically accepted his fate, and Sean had no more fight in him and no more light in his eyes, which made Devlin think that Sean was now boring. Because, you know, it's all about the fight.
Yeah.
So Devlin decided that he wasn't going to deal with this, basically.
Right.
And put the gun to Sean's head, hoping to inflict some sort of reaction, but Sean didn't even flinch. So this angered Devlin, and he forced Sean up and out of the apartment. They went into Devlin's truck and drove for an hour. And Sean had almost thought that he was just going to be returned home.
Yeah.
But this wasn't the case. The truck eventually came to a stop in the middle of the woods. And Devlin finally saw that Sean was afraid, which this is made, enjoyed it.
So he's just, like, playing games with him at this point.
Sean was forced out of the truck, and his hands were bound with duct tape again, and his mouth was covered. Devlin pushed Sean down onto the ground, and when he tried to crawl away, Devlin grabbed Sean by the neck, lifted him off the ground, and began strangling him. Sean tried to kick and fight as he began blacking out. Devlin felt at this point that he wouldn't really be able to get out of the situation and decided that he had to kill Sean, even though he didn't really want to. Right before he blacked out, Sean was able to say, "I promise. I promise I will never run. I will never tell anyone. I promise, or you can kill me." This made Devlin pause for a second, and then he let Sean go, dropping him to the ground. He accepted this promise, but Sean had to start acting as his son, so people didn't start getting suspicious.
Right.
Because it was hard to keep a boy locked up.
Yeah.
Sean was told every day if he left, his family would be harmed, so he stayed for the next 4 years. The days began blending together for Sean, and later he said, quote, "Yeah, there was times that I thought it was July and it was snowing outside. I didn't keep track of time or day. It was just another day added to my life."
So they began presenting a son and father relationship to the outside world. He made Sean go by the name Sean Devlin. The two would go to the store and be out about town acting totally normal to store workers, neighborhooders, because that's a real word. Neighbors, I lost my place, and even passing police officers. This is like another story we covered. I can't remember anyone's name because I have a terrible memory. But the girl who started going grocery shopping with the
Colleen
guy.
Stan?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being my memory bank.
You're welcome.
When the two would go out and Sean would do a convincing job, he was rewarded at home with video games or junk food. He even began letting Sean go out into the world on his own, hanging out with friends, getting a cell phone, and going on dates. But he was never allowed to go to school. And I think that's what, threw people off, is that, he had a cell phone and never called his parents. But he was truly just scared that his parents would die, and he didn't want them to die.
Exactly.
He was like, this is an okay enough existence, essentially. When Sean was able to go out on his own, he quickly became friends with their next-door neighbor, 11-year-old Tony Douglas. Sean would go out with the Douglas family to get food, see movies, and go to the mall. He even spent holidays together, and they would have sleepovers. Sean never spoke of his real identity to them. And one time, Sean was watching TV with the Douglas family, and Tony's sister-in-law, Kelly, said, there was a news report playing about Sean Hornbeck, which showed his picture. She was shocked at the similarities and asked Sean if that was him. Sean just laughed it off, basically just ignoring the question. Kelly later told reporters that she thought that the Devlins had a strange relationship and that Sean was spoiled and was given anything he wanted. One night, police even stopped Sean for riding his bike after curfew, and he didn't tell the police his real name and just went back to the apartment.
Which is, crazy because you have all of these opportunities.
Yeah, and I think, just as a kid, you're terrified.
Exactly.
Because even if you are physically aging, you're still kind of stuck in that trauma age, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, he was an 11-year-old boy, probably even when he was 14. They presented a nice front to the world, but inside the home was a world of sexual abuse, being frequently raped by Devlin, and sometimes he was even videotaping it. As the years went by, Sean basically lived by the fact that he had two options, to either endure the abuse or die. A psychologist told 48 Hours whether Sean went to a pizza parlor, to a friend's house, the message was still in his head. As the years grew by, Sean became visibly older, which made Devlin bored with him and think about getting someone new, someone younger, because that was the fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Devlin was no longer aroused by Sean, and the sexual abuse decreased. He would even talk about doing things with another kid in front of Sean. Sean knew that if Devlin got someone new, he would have to get rid of him, so Sean became worried for his own life. He also feared for this new kid. He was concerned that if Devlin did get a new kid, that they would have to go through all of the things that he did. Sean and Devlin started getting into more frequent arguments, and Sean started to become defiant, because he was a teen now, too. Devlin became scared that Sean would run, so he decided to make a plan that would keep Sean. He thought, if Sean helped me kidnap someone new, he would have to stay, or else he would also be in trouble for kidnapping.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, here's the thing.
That's not true.
I don't think that's how that would work.
No.
Unless he was, like that one guy on season 2 of Mindhunter, whose name I also cannot remember, so I'm going to stop making references.
All I know is it's the Candyman and that other guy that worked with the Candyman.
Yeah.
So now we go into the abduction of Ben Ombi. So in January of 2007, 4.5 years after Sean was abducted, while Devlin had been out, he discovered a new boy, 13-year-old Ben Ombi.
Who's only a year younger than Sean, right? Isn't Sean
Sean's 15.
Yeah, never mind.
But he looked young.
Yeah.
So Devlin had stalked him for weeks and decided it was time to take him. Devlin came home one day and told Sean they were going to go get Ben. At this, Sean went fucking crazy, screaming, "There's no way another boy should go through what I went through." They argued for hours until eventually they went to bed, but neither one of them slept. The next day, on January 8th, 2007, Devlin went to work, but left and came home early, saying he was sick, and came home around 1 p.m. He told Sean to get in the truck, and when Sean refused, he forced him in anyways.
Yeah.
Sean knew what was going to happen, and decided at that moment that he was going to protect whatever new kid Devlin had decided to take.
Yeah.
They drove about 50 miles west of Kirkwood to a town in Franklin County called Buford. Devlin parked his truck near a hair salon on a residential road. They waited in the truck for about an hour and a half until a school bus pulled up down the road at around 3:30 p.m. Two children got off the bus. The first was 15-year-old Mitchell Holtz, who hurried up and got into his Chevy pickup truck down the road. The second was 13-year-old Ben Ombi. Devlin crept the truck alongside Ben, not realizing that the other boy, Mitchell, was still in his truck watching what was happening.
Oh, shit.
Devlin opened his door and asked Ben if he knew where someone lived. Ben knew that no one by that name lived in their neighborhood and started to become nervous.
Yeah, because it's a small town.
Mm-hmm. Devlin then jumped out of the truck and pointed his gun at Ben. Devlin then forced the boy into the truck, got in, and had Ben duck down so no one would see him in the truck before speeding away. And as Mitchell saw this, the way that the truck was parked, he basically just saw the truck up next to Ben and then saw the truck speed away. Like, he didn't see him pull Ben inside.
Like, he didn't see the struggle, but Ben was there and then
and
wasn't
then he
there.
Wasn't. Yeah.
That's still, like, for a 15-year-old, good job.
So Sean tried to keep Ben calm, telling him that as long as he did what he was told, everything would be okay. The first day they were home, Sean protected Ben from Devlin, enduring the sexual abuse himself that was meant for Ben. He kept trying to be the one to take the abuse for Ben the days that he was there, but that wasn't always the case, and Ben was abused almost every day he was in captivity.
Yeah, because that's what he wanted. That's why he wanted a new boy.
The next day, Pam and Craig Akers, Sean's parents, woke up seeing the abduction of Ben Ombi on the news. And they thought that Ben looked super similar to Sean.
Yeah.
And, like, knew that the cases had to be related. Meanwhile, Ben's parents began the search for their own son, starting the search after Ben never made it home from school. They called the police and everyone that they could who would have known where their son was.
Yeah.
The police, not having enough evidence to actually issue an Amber Alert, issued an EPA, which is an endangered person advisory. Because I learned that if, in order to issue an Amber Alert, there has to be solid evidence that the child was actually abducted and just missing.
Okay, interesting.
But there was one person who called the police, 15-year-old Mitchell Holtz.
Awesome.
And he was able to list off every single detail about the truck that he saw pulling up to Ben in their neighborhood.
Bless your 15-year-old memory.
Right? And luckily, Mitchell was a truck fanatic, so he was known to pay attention to things like that and the little details.
Yeah.
He said it was a white Nissan pickup truck with a camper top, had elongated windows on the side, a 2-inch trailer hitch on the back, rust on the fenders, and even knew the tire tread.
Damn.
The only thing he didn't pick up was the license plate number.
God damn it. I'm just kidding.
But, you know, he did a good job.
He got a solid description.
Mm-hmm. And this honestly kind of made the police suspicious of him for a minute.
Yeah.
But he was like, guys,
I just love trucks.
I just love trucks. And it was fine.
Yeah.
So the police took tire tread impressions at the scene of the kidnapping, and they matched the description that Mitchell had given. The police created an APB on the vehicle, and the description of the truck was given to all of the other news outlets.
Yeah.
Leads started pouring in after this, as many people had seen the truck around Buford the day of the disappearance.
Again, dude, it's a small town, and nothing fucking happens in a small town.
Exactly.
So if they see something out of place, you fucked.
And so, just like in Sean's case, a search party was created, with some volunteers searching the woods and some handing out flyers with Ben's picture and the description of the truck.
So, one of these flyers made its way over to Kirkwood's own Emo's Pizza, where the owner, Mike Prosperi, read it. Upon reading his flyer, he realized that the description of the truck matched the one that Michael Devlin drove.
And Michael Devlin was an employee of his.
Yeah. He originally thought that Devlin couldn't have done that. He had known Devlin and his family for over 20 years. But he had a feeling in the pit of his stomach. So on January 9th, after locking up Emo's Pizza for the night, he decided to drive over to Devlin's apartment and got a closer look of his truck, realizing that it perfectly matched the description on the flyer. He also then thought about the fact that Devlin had not been to work in the past couple of days and had gone home early the day that Ben had been abducted, which was not like Devlin. The next morning, he decided to stop into the police department on his way to work, and he gave Devlin's name to the police, even though he still couldn't quite believe that Devlin had been the person to do this.
So, like, it's good that he did this, but I feel like it's kind of shitty that he waited till the next morning.
Yeah.
And, like, didn't just call the police right then and there.
Right.
But whatever. At least
he still went to the police. Yeah. At least he didn't wait, like, 10 years later.
Yeah, right.
Like some people do. The police immediately began an investigation into Michael Devlin and notified the FBI. The next day, on January 10th, Devlin actually went back into work at Emo's Pizza. Can you imagine, like, being at work with the person you just called their name into the police? That would be hella awkward. That night, two police officers were actually called to Devlin's building for unrelated matters, but noticed Devlin's truck and that it matched the description in the Ben Ownby case. Upon asking neighbors about the truck, the police ran into Devlin, who was taking out his trash. He immediately became defensive when asked about his truck and hurried away inside. The police stayed at his apartment complex that night, keeping an eye out on Devlin's apartment and truck. On Friday, January 12th, FBI was called in to follow up on the tips about the white pickup truck and Michael Devlin. They arrived at Emo's Pizza and asked him if he could step outside and if they could search his truck, which he agreed to. They sat inside of the police cruiser and spoke for several hours as the truck was searched. The conversation remained casual, but FBI agent Willett noticed that he kept mentioning a godson named Sean. What a fucking dumbass, honestly.
I know, right?
They get so cocky, it amazes me. But whenever she mentioned Ben Ownby, she noticed that Devlin would start getting nervous. Agent Willett told Devlin that the tire tracks left at the scene matched his truck. Devlin took a moment and then started crying, saying, "I'm a bad person." He confessed to taking Ben Ombi and then shocked everyone by confessing to also taking Sean Hornbeck. Devlin seemed almost relieved to be arrested. After this, Devlin then took the police to his apartment and Devlin opened the door for them. Sean and Ben were sitting on the couch playing video games when they arrived. Agent Willett asked the older boy if he was Sean Hornbeck because she would like to take him home. I'm like gonna cry.
When I read it, I cried.
The two boys were finally safe and were able to go home. Sean was 16 when he was rescued. People from all over Richmond couldn't believe it. They hung welcome home posters in their yawns. In their yards. Sean was named the Missouri Miracle. It took a while for Sean to reacclimate to life outside of Devlin's apartment, but he eventually got a job, a car, and began going to school for a career in criminal law, which is very heartwarming.
And he also, like, is an advocate and helps people who have been abducted.
Yeah, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. Also, for the peeps listening, we're recording two episodes today to try and, like, not have to record on Christmas break. And, like, both of our... Both of our cases today, like, when the cops show up, they're just like, yeah, I fucking did it. Like, yeah,
for real. Like, they were just like, yep, it's
you
me.
You caught me.
Here we are.
Oops.
So, now we're going to tell you a little bit about the shitbag who took these boys, Michael J. Devlin. He was born on November 18th, 1965. And as a child, he was adopted as an infant into a large family. He had three brothers and two sisters, all of which were also adopted. He had a good childhood with no sort of abuse, unlike most child molesters.
Yeah.
He was known as a friendly kid, but was always sort of a social misfit. At age 13, he realized that he was attracted to young boys when he tried to molest a younger boy but was unsuccessful. He grew up in Webster Groves, Missouri, and all of his family still lives in Missouri. As an adult, he worked as a manager for Emo's Pizza and as a part-time funeral home worker at Bob Chapel in Kirkwood, Missouri. He worked with almost all of his siblings at Emo's Pizza, and the manager said that the family was as good as gold. And even though he knew he was attracted to young boys, he tried to keep himself in line by making sure he didn't have contact with any children, which is why he worked jobs where he wouldn't be. Like, he worked in the back of the pizza place where he didn't have to see, like, the kids that would come in with their family. And you wouldn't see kids at a funeral home. That's, but
at least he's trying to control his... But also just, like, go see a therapist and be like, hey, I'm thinking about little kids and maybe they can hospitalize you.
Right.
Just kidding.
And so even though in the beginning he... didn't have children captive, he would suffice himself by watching child porn, and he would create obsessions to fix on, like, eating.
Yeah.
Which, he was a large man. He was 6'4" and 300 pounds.
Yeah, that's a big boy.
Yeah, which is why he was able to just, like, throw 90-pound fucking...
Yeah, just, like, over your shoulder and caveman carry him away, basically.
And according to friends, Devlin used to be a very happy and outgoing person, but after he was diagnosed with
disabetes. It's where he disses people too much and, like, no one's his friend anymore.
Jesus Christ, I don't know why I said disabetes. I'm going to start over because I'm going to say it. Diabetes was what I was trying to do in my head and I fucked up.
And it just came out disobedient.
Yes. According to friends, Devlin used to be a very happy and outgoing person. But after he was diagnosed with diabetes and had two toes amputated in 2002, he became a different person. And this was the same year that he abducted Sean Hornby.
Yeah. Beck. Feels like a dramatic reaction to getting diagnosed with diabetes. Like, my father had diabetes and didn't go and kidnap children.
Right? It's like you just shoot yourself insulin.
Yeah,
you
he's
know?
Like just using this as an excuse, basically.
Yeah. And his neighbors at that shit-ass apartment didn't know him very well, but they did always know him to be one to always follow the rules. And he would even, like, call a tow truck if people weren't parked in their correct parking spaces. So
honestly,
he was a dick.
Me as fuck. I'm such an asshole.
Later, he spoke of his need to kidnap and how he kept it in check for a long time. And once on a family vacation at the age of 30, he saw a boy about 10 years old and felt an intense compulsion to take him. He says that this trip is the one that lit his fuse to actually start looking for a boy to kidnap. He had spent time driving around looking for a boy before he found Sean Hornbeck. And he knew that his obsession and sexual attraction to boys was wrong and that he knew he was sick for thinking that way.
Right.
Devlin ended up being charged with 80 counts of sexual assault, kidnapping, and attempted murder. Devlin pled guilty to all counts and was sentenced to 72 life terms.
Thank God he didn't put the family through that trial, though.
Right.
You know.
Well, so while he was in court, he still described all of the things that he did to Ben and Sean.
Oh, fun. Love that.
And Sean's mother fell into her husband's arms weeping.
Yeah.
And something that the prosecutor said was that he was honestly happy with the sentence because in order for, because there was no like life without the possibility of parole.
Right.
But it was 72 life terms. So the way that jail works, he had to have lived over 100 years old to even get the possibility of parole.
Yeah.
And while he was in jail, Devlin was actually stabbed while eating in the jail cafeteria by two inmates who were angered by his crimes. Unfortunately, he survived. And he's still living out his sentence at 54 years old.
Wow, I really thought with the stabbing that he was, it was going to be like, mm-hmm. and now he's dead.
No.
Interesting.
And I watched an interview that came out, I think in 2018, where it was Sean and he, I don't remember who he was talking to, but he basically said that like he was pissed that Devlin gets all of these special treatments. Like he gets to be like, he has security around him all the time.
Yeah.
And has solitary confinement and stuff because
people will try and kill him all the
time. Yeah, because he's like, you did this shitty ass crime. You should be in the general population of prison. And if something happens to you because you're a shitty person, then something happens to
right,
you.
Right, yeah. It is kind of crazy.
Yeah. But I wanted to end this on a little bit of a fun fact.
Yeah.
So Sean Hornbeck was actually 21 years old when the three women that we covered in episode 21 that were kidnapped in Cleveland and kept hostage for 10 years by Ariel Castro were rescued. And so when people are that have been captive or rescued, like it basically brings Sean's story back up.
Yeah.
And so he commented on the news and gave support to the women by saying, "The first memory I think of every time is the first time I saw my parents. I hope those girls felt the exact same thing. Aww. I would tell them just to take their time. Don't rush life. It will come natural to you."
That's really sweet.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's a nice sentiment.
Yeah. So I wanted to end it on a little bit of a
nicer
note.
That's good.
Than the fact that Michael Devlin is still alive.
Yeah. That's, yeah. He at least to an extent like owned up to his crimes and like is taking his punishment, you know?
Yeah, like he knew he was wrong. He didn't plead not guilty. Like,
yeah.
He didn't try to run. He was like, yep, I did it.
Okay. But is this not, can you take a picture of this right now? Because this is
V-cute.
The cutest thing. But do you want to hear my Florida man story?
I sure do.
Guys, this cat is literally laying on me like a baby right now, and it's the best thing I've ever seen. So, the title of my Florida man is Florida Man Arrested After Attacking Girlfriend with McDonald's Sweet and Sour Sauce. A Florida man was so upset with his girlfriend getting his McDonald's order wrong that he pelted her with sweet and sour packets.
Honestly, me.
Right? But Jesus Oscar Ferrer Jr., 30 years old, was expecting a meal from McDonald's from his girlfriend. Instead, she brought back the wrong meal and he was not happy. The girlfriend, who had not been named, was pelted with packets of sweet and sour sauce by Farrer, who was mad that his order was not what he asked for. It occurred in a Tampa motel room. And then he also, like, pinned her to the ground. And
okay.
It got a little bit
more violent than just packets.
But she did rip off part of his beard in the struggle. So he, like, also got what he deserved. And when authorities arrived, he was nowhere to be found. However, police caught up to him, like, running, and they arrested him.
Good.
And he was sent to jail for felony battery.
Wow.
But, yeah, that was my Florida man.
It was a good story.
It was
liked
really
it.
Dumb, but... That's I appreciate okay. it, you know. But we hope that you guys liked this story this week. We hope that, you know, going into this holiday season, your life isn't too painful as sometimes being with family can be. So,
and also, like, not the day it comes out, but, like, the weekend is the start of Hanukkah. So happy Hanukkah to anyone who celebrates that.
Yes, happy Hanukkah.
And, get into the giving spirit, and if you liked this episode, give us a 5-star review.
God damn. I thought you were gonna, like, plug a charity or something.
Nope.
That's hilarious.
I'm plugging myself. And you can find us on all the social medias doing our damn thing.
Doing our damn thing. If the picture of Azula being cuddled like a baby was anywhere near cute, maybe also we'll put it on Instagram.
Yeah. I'll put it on Instagram. It's fine.
But we hope that you guys have a great holiday. Try not to kill your family.
Right.
And keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.